Welcome to the Hidden Potential Podcast. I'm your host, Omar Hargrove. And in today's special episode, we have a conversation between me and Eric Campos about building and sustaining intimacy. In this conversation, Eric interviews me for his research assignment in Bible college about the topic of intimacy relative to church members, leaders, and even within marriage. We talk about what it practically looks like and how it can be made sustainable. Eric is a youth pastor, a good friend of mine, and a minister with over 13 years of experience. Let's get started.
Hey, I am attending Southeastern University, and I just had a few questions for Homer for his podcast, and I really think it'd be very beneficial. Just for you guys who are listening, it's I'm taking a class on marriage and family, and some of the questions is regarding and talking about intimacy, not just the intimacy of just sex, but, you know, emotional intimacy. And so, Homer, are you ready for some questions?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Yeah, am I doing good?
You're doing great, man. Yeah, go okay, for it.
Awesome. So the very first question is this, is what is your definition of intimacy?
I would say that it's founded on trust and the ability to be transparent with one another in a sense, like the deepest level.
Okay, so founded on trust and like the deepest level. Okay.
Yeah. And trust and ability to be transparent.
Okay, trust and ability to be transparent. And so like going to the next question, because it's really good. So what actions do you feel like foster intimacy? Like, cause you're talking about trust and transparency, you know, what actions for you, do you follow to foster intimacy, like within, people within your congregation or in your marriage with your wife and stuff like that?
I think that it would really fall into different kind of actions of love. I think that transparency typically has to be earned. I kind of balance like transparency and trust together. And because in order to be transparent, you have to be able to trust someone. And I think that earning it through different actions of love and even simply like quality time, that you're able to earn that. But there's like a famous quote that people don't care about how much you know until they know how much you care. And yeah. I think that a big part of being able to have intimacy with others, again, is earning that through showing that you care. Not, I think that words fall real cheap, but yeah, when you're willing to show up and be there for people, and as well as like in simply just spending that time, that's where it's earned at.
Cool. So Homer, I have to ask you the question. You talked about quality time, which is love languages, right? So I have to ask you, what is your top love language?
Mine, I haven't taken that test in a long time, but I think one of my top ones is gifts. And it's not that I'm materialistic. It's just, for me, I love giving gifts. Like when I give my wife gifts, like I usually go all out. The same goes for my kids. And I like really take heart into like making that gift seem meaningful and special. And I feel it like reciprocated that way as well. I don't really know what my second one is. I would assume, I would think that it's either, it's probably either quality time or acts of service, would be my second. Okay.
Nice. That's pretty cool. Cause like, for one of these classes as well, for the same class, marriage and family, I actually had to take the five love languages. And, I was really at awe because usually I always have words of affirmation. Then I have quality time, but this time it feels like it's reversed. Not that I'm needy. Right. But it's just like, man, you know, I want people to hang around with me, and stuff like that. And so it's just really cool just to see, you know, how when we begin to identify people's love languages, it really helps me to express a different type of intimacy for other people. So yeah. It's like, I never had that conversation with you. So now when I go around you, I want to make sure I give you a gift, you know, so I'm going to go around you like, hey man, I really appreciate you. Here's $5 or something like that.
It has to be special. You can't just give me $5.
I'm just kidding. But you know what, dude, I remember one time you actually gave me a gift. It was one of the most coolest gifts. I remember you gave me this Bluetooth speaker that it was mirrored, and then it almost looked like an eternal vortex of lights. It was the most coolest speaker I've ever gotten. And when it broke, I was very distraught. I was like, dang it, it broke. So I remember your gift, man. So I really appreciate that gift.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
but what's it called? So nice. So actions that foster intimacy. So the third one is, the question would be, what actions hinder for you when it comes to intimacy?
Oh, man, that's... whenever there's like, I think, what's the right word for the opposite of authenticity? when ingenuous, when people behave ingenuously, I think that's it's almost feels like a betrayal of trust.
Yeah.
And I think that would be like the number one thing. And if, even for me, like on a personal note, not even when it comes to, like as a minister, but when I meet people, when you could sense that level of ingenuous, it's really hard for me to click with those people. And I feel like there's always like this wedge because of the lack of authenticity. And so that's a big one for me. But I think also when it comes to people and when it people in ministry, as far as like people being ministered to, I think that especially this, like our culture today, it really craves authentic leadership. And when they feel like they're not talking to the real person, or they're not getting the real version of that person, they're only getting the stage person or the show. I think that a lot of people today are more offended by that than ever before. And it goes back to that level of transparency in wanting to know the real person. I think a lot of it has to do with like our ability to even search things today, and like into how so much of our world seems artificial. It's like even now, like people care about what CEOs do or say. Like people are like all up on Elon Musk and like what kind of person he is. And it's like, people don't just care about the logo or the corporation. They actually are so concerned about the genuineness of the actual person leading even just a company, let alone a church. I think that is the number one thing that isn't like a direct offense that I think people don't necessarily anticipate, to where you don't have to do something necessarily wrong to break that level of intimacy.
No, I think that's super good, because people are looking for people who will be authentic. Because, like, for instance, for me, when I thought about that question, what actions hinder intimacy, I began to think to myself, it's like, okay, there's areas of my life where I work in ministry, right? So sometimes I can get so plagued with the thinking of, man, you know what, I need more of a number. And then what I begin to focus on, like, okay, I just need more numbers, more numbers, more numbers. But the thing, I begin to lose the value of knowing people's names. And so like for me, I think for me, that's something that is so important, is knowing the true thing that hinders me is also for me is unresolved wounds. You know, so sometimes I feel like for me, because I've been, let's just say, hurt in ministry because maybe this person did this or this person did that. So I feel like when I get to the place where I have unresolved wounds, I rob people of the gift of me. And I think that that's something that for me, that I'm really wanting to learn in and just really grow for me in my area of intimacy, because people need an authentic you. You know, I don't know who, I think it was Craig Rochelle that said it, you know, people always follow a leader who's always real and one who's always right.
Yeah.
You know, because like people are desiring authenticity and thinking like, hey, they're not looking for this superhuman person, their superhuman pastor or leader. You know, people relate and connect through our vulnerabilities and our openness, our transparency, and through our weaknesses. And I think sometimes it's okay to be a little bit vulnerable with people, of course, with people who we trust, you know, because it's just sometimes we're all imperfect, broken people, you know, needing help.
Yeah, that's so true. And I would even go as far to say that when we extend a level of vulnerability, even with someone that then since we just meet, like say at church or as a minister to other people, it really, you're extending a trust that hasn't necessarily been earned yet, but it's like there's layers of vulnerability. You can be vulnerable with, like, say some past experiences. It doesn't mean that you have to be vulnerable with, like, the last fight you had with your wife, you know, there's definitely different layers that you could shed, that aren't going into being like almost like inappropriate for someone that you just met.
Yeah. Yeah. So I really think that that's something that for me as a person, I really wouldn't work on is being my authentic self for other people, because again, people want to follow authentic people, which I really agree with you. Next question is, do you think there can be true friendship without intimacy?
I think that would more so be an acquaintance. Like, you can be polite, you can be polite and friendly with others, without being necessarily, without having that intimacy, but that's all it will be is cordial, that cordialness of just, you know, being culturally polite with one another. As far as like being a real friend, I mean, I think that we would have to unpack what friends are. And when I consider who a friend is, that is somebody that I can confide in, someone that understands my own weaknesses, that allow me to have humanity. Acquaintances don't consider your humanity, but friends do. They do not bail on you if you make a mistake or if you said the wrong thing or did the wrong thing. Real friends see past those kinds of human features, recognizing their own, and give you that kind of grace. And I think that that only comes when you have, you know, intimacy with friendship. You dig what I mean?
Yeah, no, I really agree, because I feel like sometimes, like, I've had moments there at church. You know, there's this one guy, and what's it called? He was just telling me, like, man, you know, I really appreciate your friendship. And I told him, and I said, hey, you know, you only talk to me only Wednesdays and Sundays. And I said, that's not a friend. You know, that's just kind of what you're saying is an acquaintance. And sometimes I think, for me, we think, oh, that's friendship, because I got to use, you know, the more you're ministering with me, the more friendship I'm going to build with you. But dude, people want to be more than just a tool. People want to be known as a person. And so when I told him that, I'm like, man, I would really like to be your friend. But like, hey, I'm not going to base and say, you know, I'm your friend just because I meet with you or talk with you on Wednesdays and Sundays. You know, so like, that's one thing for me. Like, I really do believe that, you know, true authentic friendship comes with vulnerabilities and being able to say, hey, this is what I'm going through. You know, you've heard a lot of my struggles, you know, throughout the years. And I really, really appreciate you, you know, for just championing me, you know, throughout the years and stuff like that. And I truly appreciate you as a friend and just really hearing me and understanding me and kind of not just saying, oh, everything's going to be okay, but everything's like, hey, it's not okay. You can do a whole lot better. So I really appreciate you as a friend.
Yeah, for sure, brother. And I think that the essence of friendship is really seeing the potential in somebody, regardless of how strong or weak they may be in the minute.
Yeah.
And it's like reciprocated too. And I think that we are called to be like friendly, of course, to all people. But when it comes to like earning a friendship with someone, and there has to be like this mutual extension of trust where your bond grows with each other. And that happens through spending real time and having real actions behind it. You know, it's like even just having someone help you move. That's like a lot of investment in the friendship. And there's a different, I think that when it comes to like true friendship, that you can equate it to a scoreboard. Acquaintances, there's no score of, or per se, of how that friendship was earned. But real friendship is like, oh no, they did this for me, I've done that for them. Like, we've been there for each other, and you can actually tally up what marks y'all's your specific friendships.
Yeah, no, that's super good.
Hey listeners, today I'm reaching out for your support to keep our journey of innovative Christian leadership alive. Every week we dive into territories of faith-based leadership because of the contributions made by people who believe in this mission. Whether you want to help us by becoming a monthly supporter or by submitting a one-time donation, you help fuel our discussions on authentic and practical leadership. Your generosity allows us to help other leaders just like yourself harness their creativity for the greater good of our communities and beyond. As a monthly supporter, you can submit questions and comments to be shared on the show each week, and you'll also get weekly shout outs on air for being a member. And if you become a super supporter, you will receive a monthly free product from our online store. To support us, please visit homerhargrove.com and look for the support section. It's quick, it's easy, and every bit of it helps us to make greater impact to Christian leadership. Thank you for being a part of our mission. Now let's get back to today's episode.
Well, Homer, I got one and last final question for you. Are you ready for it?
As ready as I could ever be.
Okay, nice. All right, the last question is, can a marriage last without intimacy?
That's the question? No, definitely not. It's I think that every time that the intimacy is reserved from one another, that it's typically out of either hurt or a lack of trust. And it is like strangling a marriage. It's to take away intimacy is suffocating the life of a marriage. And even when it comes to like fights within a marriage and that result in the hiding of intimacy, I think that most of those fights can be resolved through giving that intimacy undeservedly. And I'm not talking about like abuse or anything like that. Yeah. You know, I'm talking about your typical marriage fights and misunderstandings and disagreements. Those kinds of fights. I'm definitely not talking about physical abuse or anything like that. But when it comes to these like typical arguments that a lot of marriages have, and a lot of marriages are broken apart from those kinds of fights, not because there's this big falling out, but because there is a suffocation of intimacy because of it being reserved after all these little fights. But even in my own marriage, the times where we would get into these scuffles with one another, and when we would extend intimacy regardless of how we felt in the moment, it always resulted in forgiveness and more love, and to where that bond just becomes even stronger because intimacy was given undeservedly.
Yeah, no, that's so good. You just made me reminded me of, I remember one time we did something for marriages at our church, and they said that was really powerful, and it just really stuck with me. And they said, you know, in a marriage, there can't be two masters, but there have to be two servants. Because like, that's the thing that I'm learning is like, man, like the ability to forgive. I'm like, man, you're super close to me. I can't just go home anymore. You know, you are home, you know? So it's just like, man, I have to learn how to take the role of a servant and saying, hey, I'm going to choose forgiveness over than just holding things on. And so I do have one more bonus question, but I don't know if you want to keep it for it or not.
Let's do it.
So this is a totally bonus question is, how long have you been married? That's not the question yet, but.
Yeah, it will be 12 years this August.
Nice. That's awesome, dude. So I've been married for about a year and a few months now. And so my question to you is, what are you doing out of all the 12 years to keep the relationship hot and alive?
Like sexually? I'll just say
that I said if we wanted to cancel it or not.
No, that's great. I'll say a couple things. When it comes to keeping it alive, I'll start off by saying that I'm more in love with my wife now than when we first got married. I'm more committed to her now. I'm just like all in at such a greater exponential factor that right now today than I was when we first met, when we first got married. And our year going into our year 14 is greater than our year 12 going into our year 12 is greater than our year 1, 5, 10, et cetera. And I think that a big part of that is because we have continued to build trust with one another and extend trust even in times where we disagreed. I think that especially like having kids, I think is one of the biggest testing times of a marriage, and learning how to trust each other through those life changes that we go through. And the reason I'm saying all this is because that's where most fights happen, is through life changes. Even when it comes to marriage counseling at our church, that my wife and I have counseled other married couples, almost every single time was within this first year of them having kids, and they start having marriage problems. And when you have marriage problems from these fights, what typically goes to is your sex life. And so I think that whenever you do not have that sex life, one of the factors is typically because there is a level of trust that feels damaged. And whether it's, and it could even be not like, not in the sense of being damaged, like, oh, they found a side chick or something, but it can be damaged in the sense that of how you're parenting, and you feel frustrated with how your husband is disciplining the children, or you feel frustrated with how your wife goes about letting them do this or letting them do that. Those moments end up still affecting your trust, even though it's as parents, it affects how you feel about each other as a couple. And I feel like I felt really surprised that there is sometimes where there's a period where it's like the most of the fights that we were having was about how we viewed different ideas of parenting. And that's with us even talking about parenting before we ever became parents, and thinking that we were on the same page, and realizing that there's certain things that we felt very differently about, but learning how to trust each other through all of that, and learning how to, I don't want to use the word compromise, because it's more so learning how to trust the other person through those moments. My wife learning, whether it's parenting or even like handling money, like us learning how to trust each other. And those things helps foster the trust and intimacy. And I feel like that is like a foundational part that has helped our intimacy in especially our sex life, because it's really hard to have sex with someone that you feel so frustrated with. And the other part of that is really holding responsibilities to each other. Even just me being a man and like leading as a man. And I make it a point to consistently try to make strides in taking responsibility for the family and doing more than what is the bottom line. I think that a lot of men struggle in their sex life with their spouse because of the very short, how should I say this, that the minimum that they end up giving. I think a big part of it is, again, circulated around some parenting and even like basic stuff like cleaning up the house. And most women get frustrated and turned off by their husband when they feel like they're having to be a mother for their husband, to where they're having to pick up after their clothes, and they say, why are you leaving your clothes on for? Well, what's wrong with that? It's like, it's stuff like that, that ends up slowly killing that sex drive for their partner, because it starts feeling like you're their mom. And same goes for, you know, husbands to their wives, but it's just this big idea of just realizing that when I don't step up as a husband or as a dad, and if I'm it will affect my sex life, because they will not be as aroused by me, because it's just not cute. It's just not cute anymore. Like when you're like a teenager and you seem like a bad boy that doesn't care. Girls might, the teenage girl might like that. They think it's, you know, this experience to be with this kind of bad boy that is irresponsible. But then once you have kids and once you have to do the dishes, it's no longer cute. And it makes, it just really can kill the passion very quickly. And for me, when my wife leaves the house, even if I have all the kids, if she goes somewhere, I make it a point to try to do chores. Like, yeah. I want her to come back and be like today she took one of our kids to dance practice and it was all muddy outside. Our dogs brought mud in. And even though I had two other kids with me, I swept and mopped all the floor because I wanted her to come home and be like, oh, wow, like you clean too. And
yeah.
It's little things like that, in my opinion, that turn her on. Like when she comes in, I'm like, wow, you did all the dishes. Oh my goodness. It's those kind of acts of service that can really make way for a better sex life, because you're showing love in picking up after yourself and going above and beyond. I get my wife flowers consistently. If I'm at the store with all the kids and my wife's not there, I'll typically get her some flowers. Even if I just got her flowers a couple of weeks ago, if there's no special occasion, I'll get her flowers because I'm trying to romance her consistently in these different ways, whether it's romancing her with flowers or romancing her with sweeping and mopping the floors. I'm making these efforts to show her that I love her, that I appreciate her, that I see her. And those small actions go an incredibly long way. And when I don't do those things, it will feel, there'll be a strain. There's a strain on our intimacy, on our passion. And the final thing that I would say on keeping it hot and bothered is, as a safety net, my wife and I have an established amount of like how frequently we believe is a minimum necessary for us to be intimate, where weekly we have an understanding that we need to have sex at least this many times a week to have a healthy relationship with one another. And that's something that we communicated and talked about. It may be different for everybody else, but we will not go, it's very rare for us to go more than a week of not having sex with each other. And the very few times that that's happened in our marriage, we feel it. We feel more frustrated with each other. We feel more easily irritated with one another. And when we recognize that and we just go at it and recognize that and just say, you know, we need to have sex tonight. It's going down. Don't matter how late it is, how tired we are, we need to do it. And when we do afterwards, it's like we look at each other like, I love you so much. Why were we ever mad at each other? It's like that's exactly what we needed, was this connection spiritually, emotionally, physically in that single moment. And so I think that as a safety net, there has to be like an established communication of to where y'all both understand this level of importance about your sex life.
Yeah, no, I think that's super good. I think those little, that intentionality, you know, I think is so important when it comes, you know, those things like that I'm learning too, you know. I think it helped that we dated for a while, you know, but now it's like completely other ballgame, you know, being married and stuff like that. But Homer, I am done, man. That's all my questions.
Well, there you have it. I hope that this episode was meaningful and edifying for your leadership and your growth within your ministry and organization. Could you do me a favor? Could you leave a rating and review for this podcast? It'd really help me out and help others be able to see this show in their feed. You can also visit homerhargrove.com to be able to learn more, connect, or become one of our supporters. Until next time, have a great life.